Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, January 20th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a chilly 37 gray degrees with more rain coming here in upstate New York. Good thing it's not snow. It's got to be the winter that never was. I think this is winter number two in a row like this. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Biosensors, Telemedicine, Diagnosing Illness, Dr. Smartphone, and DNA. We looked at a lot of different things yesterday. We kind of got a little off the track, so I wanted to spend it on AI, but we took a look at how this biotelemedicine is rolling out across the board. We read about $140, I think it was, or $145 a month. And you could see a doctor anytime you want. Just walk right in, get your little wearable wrist monitor that can bag and track all of your biostatistics. And we'll be able to provide you healthcare. You know, I saw a story about Watson, and we had talked about Dr. Watson quite a number of times. Good old Dr. Watson. Oh, hopefully I didn't close that. No, I didn't. Good old Dr. Watson. Dr. Watson is rolling out to many different institutions. We originally had seen that Watson was working with 20 oncology hospitals. And we watched that CBS News clip with Charlie Rose talking about Watson and artificial intelligence. We had found way, way, way back one of their first experiments had been working with Sloan Kettering Memorial Hospital or Institute in Ohio, Cancer Hospital. And that's where Watson first cut his teeth on combing through records and being able to correlate data to come up with patterns to diagnose disease that people have seemed to miss. And they gave this expose. We had to even talk about Under Armour and being able to track biostats for athletes. A story came out of Medical Express yesterday, 2 days ago. This was surprising because I did not know about this. The ethics of tracking athletes' biometric data. Now, did you guys know that they had sensors all over them? Because I didn't at all. Whether it is a Fitbit or a heart rate monitor, biometric technologies have become household devices. Professional sports leagues use some of the most technologically advanced bio data tracking systems to monitor athlete performance as well as to prevent potential injury. Many of these tracking devices involve around-the-clock surveillance of athletes' biosigns, raising several bioethical issues that apply to everyday users as well. They get 24/7 bio-monitoring for athletes. Well, hello to our tomorrow. These athletes, of course, worth millions of dollars apiece on a job contract. I'm sure that those owners would like to know what you're putting into your body or whether or not you're doing anything bad off hours. This is going to give them the heads up to all the times you fell off the wagon. I mean, how long is it going to take before your doctor's office, we already read about that swanky place in San Francisco, how long is it going to take for them to start rolling this stuff out? They had that big glass case of all those pretty wearables for you to buy. Put one of these on, push the button, and call me in the morning. That is what our new healthcare in America is going to be like. Smart medicine with biosensors is part of the 21st Century Cures Act. And with the inauguration going on today at noon Eastern, we've discovered that the changing of the guards is not going to save any of us. As a matter of fact, it may be accelerating the pace at which some of this has been happening. Obama inked so many different edicts and has completely handed it over with all kinds of new powers of surveillance to Trump. This biometric data is just going to be another tool in his tool belt. A recent Target article of the American Journal of Bioethics looks at the ethics of tracking athlete bio data, questions of privacy, autonomy, confidentiality, and conflicts of interest are just a few of the bioethical issues raised by the new bio data tracking technologies. And while specific to professional sports, this article has implications, ding ding, for anyone who's physical and physiological, and I'm going to also say psychological data is tracked using fitness devices, and I'm going to add, or Dr. Smartphone. Athletes have always given up some privacy rights, whether it is sharing medical information on and off season, testing for performance enhancers, or obtaining permission for off-season activities. Katrina Kartzietz of Stanford University and Jennifer Fishman of McGill University contend the new biometric tracking technologies are different from previous monitoring methods in both their breadth and their depth. Oh, yes. Well, looky, looky. Good thing, just like 21st Century Cures Act was talking about, non-invasive surveillance. Gotta love it. Makes it A-okay as long as it's not an insertable, right? Well, I don't know about that one. These technologies are non-invasive, often worn around the wrist or around the torso and portable, and they are able to continuously collect data for long periods of time. Furthermore, that data is typically uploaded to a cloud server or other external server where they can be accessed by multiple people. You know, they're explaining how they're doing this for sports figures, but guess what? They're doing this for us right now as a part of the NSA and any other place where they are gathering data about you. They make it sound like, oh, yeah, well, this newfangled thing where they're watching athletes, you know, this data is going up there, but don't worry about it. Well, no, we've established this. Electronic medical health records has taken down the barrier to privacy, all in the name of keeping you safe from lunatics with guns. And, you know, I'm not for giving someone who's just been released from a mental institution a firearm. Because that's something they were actually talking about. Like if he lost his guns when he gets out, he has his rights back. Well, I don't know if that's such a good idea. Not that I want to infringe or impinge on anybody's rights, but common sense says it's probably not so smart there, Johnny. You don't want to be giving him back something that he can arm himself or others with 5 minutes after he walks out the door. But on the other hand, you know, we're on a slippery slope now because your health records are no longer 100% confidential between you and your doctor. You know, I always kind of had a little bit of leeriness about going to a doctor and spilling your guts. And if you need help, you're going to have to spill your guts. Maybe do it tippy-toeing. Careful what you say, because a lot of these physicians now are working within the system. You know, we have this more state-run, Obamacare especially, state-run health providership out there. You know, you all now have an obligation to see something, say something. Because there's terrorists and crazies under every bed. And it could be your family member. You know, they had some law they were working on. And I think that might have been something as part of this HIPAA thing with Obama. Where they allowed family members to report other family members as being mentally unstable, so they could come take away their firearms and potentially locked them up for a few days involuntarily. And that was a big deal before, because I don't think that they could do that in a lot of states. Maybe they could, but I know that there were laws against that. You had to commit yourself in the past. You know, this 21st Century Cures Act had a huge mental health component. This is very concerning to me, as we have started to look at how easy it's going to be with Dr. Smartphone to diagnose a full gamut and range of mental diseases on a spectrum, all by the sound of your voice, where they will be able to take any type of brain working anomaly. Well, let's how about they could take anybody's brain, they could scan it and determine on a spectrum whether or not they have a brain anomaly by the sound of your voice. And once they've diagnosed us on a spectrum, I've talked about many, many times before, good old Tommy Insel from the department, the National Institute of Mental Health, and now working over at Google, he's very vested in coming up with easy ways to diagnose and determine your mental stability. But, you know, as they're rolling into all of this, remember, these are secrets of biology. These are very private secrets. Your biometric data and your biostatistics are a real-time dashboard that you, once you give up that privacy to, have now fully given your inner workings, what makes you tick, the ace of spades to the man. Once they get inside you, they're able to read your breathing rate, your heart rate, your oxygen levels, you know, your sugar levels, your cortisone levels, to see whether or not you're stressed. You know, and those are just the basic ones. And is it working now on facial, all these facial expression readers that can read emotions and bounce Wi-Fi off your chest and see what you're feeling right now? Tell whether or not you're genetically predisposed to disease or to crime. This literally is going to become the land of Running Man. And funny that we have brought that up quite a few times. I saw Running Man in the 80s. Arnold Schwarzenegger was in it. It was a Stephen King novel, so of course it piqued my interest. But there was a story that came out yesterday titled The Running Man. This is out of the motherboard. The Running Man is the perfect dystopian movie for Trump's inauguration. We're going to read about this. I did not realize The Running Man apparently took place in 2017, which is kind of frightening. Maybe it was 2019. I don't know. There's two dates listed in here, but close enough for me. All right. So before we go any further, though, let's read about this biomonitoring these athletes every which way and sideways 24/7. Well, us ostensibly, I can never say that word, ostensibly used with the best interests of the athletes and the team in mind, there are several issues regarding biodata that are of concern, including the fact that the use and distribution of biodata is largely unregulated. Ding, 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 ding. Notably, HIPAA, ding, ding, the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act do offer some protections. By the way, that non-discrimination, Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act is the one that I had mentioned that does not protect you from your insurance companies utilizing your genetic data against you if they find pre-existing conditions or something of that nature. Just be aware of that. Not health insurance, but life insurance companies. There is a loophole. I've covered it a few times. There are all kinds of stories out there, but be aware of that. When you give that DNA swab, if they get their hands on that and that data, you're handing it to 23andMe. You check that box, it may not be necessarily identifiable in the research studies by name to you, but I can guarantee you that if you had some sort of investigator who was out investigating you for a determination as to whether or not they want to insure you or whatever, and you have something on file there, I don't know what the laws are. Everything is kind of gray there as to who and what and how it can all happen with this newfound mountains of data that you are feeding out there on a daily basis. In the old days, it used to just be your logins and what emails you read and what websites you went to. And then it got more invasive because now they literally can read your messages and go in at any time in the name of national security, take a look at stuff. And now we are talking 24/7, reading your biostatistics. This is like having a doctor follow you around all day long, going, "Hey, Jenny, don't get so stressed out. Not good for that twitchy eye." The twitchy eye means that you got something going on in the brain there, Johnny. Here, talking to the cell phone, we're going to be able to tell what's going on and where, and then we'll make sure we get you some medication for that. All right, anyway, most notably, HIPAA, American with Disabilities Act, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, which doesn't protect you in all cases, do offer some protections, but because of the nature of the athlete's contracts, most sports leagues can still acquire unmitigated amounts of data and use and distribute it as they wish. That's pretty frightening. Additionally, there are often ways to work around these laws. HIPAA, for example, does not cover, oh, I did not know this, new and emerging technologies. Ding, ding. So guess what? Those pesky HIPAA laws that Obama wanted to get rid of, 21st Century Cures Act, did that right out of the window. Wow, that's very disturbing. So if HIPAA does not cover new and emerging technologies, look out, Chuck, because you are in the database. And everybody, including every Alphabet agency and Ginni Rometty from IBM, can get their hands on your data. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows when you've been bad or good. Oh my goodness. And this is going to be with the wristbands and your wireless in your living room. All right. Carchiazzi and Fishman provided a list of ethical issues based on literature reviews, interviews, and conferences on the use of biometric technologies. And foremost in their list of ethical issues is whether the data even provides the information that the people expect it to provide. There is an assumption that because of the large amounts of data being collected automatically, rather than self-reported by the athlete, it is more objective. However, and this is, to make it convenient for you, Johnny, we don't want you to have to go once an hour and send us your blood pressure. We'll just take all of it real time and put you in a dashboard to make sure you are operating within parameters. However, there are several factors that can skew the data results. They look at heart rate variability as an example. It is a measure of the time elapsed between the heartbeats and can theoretically help trainers determine whether an athlete is overtraining or not. The science is a bit sketchy as to whether or not heart rate variability can occur, can accurately assess athlete fatigue. Furthermore, when and how the measurements will take part in the accuracy of the data, it's only good news as the user's interpretation of the data. But additional issues are questions of athletes' autonomy when it comes to surveillance, and the athlete's privacy when it comes to confidentiality and data sharing. Advances in biometric technology means that the teams can monitor athletes around the clock, ding a ding a ding, collecting a large number of data points on various physical and physiological factors. The athletes today, it's you and Johnny tomorrow. And of course, Nana, we got to make sure Nana's doing okay. Someone's got to get over there. Look, Nana seems to be in duress. Turn on the video phone. Find out what's going on and then get over there, Jenny. There are several groups that would benefit from knowing an athlete's biometric data. The league has a vested interest. It's like spring here, guys. The league has a vested interest in knowing the athlete's data, and additionally, other teams stand to benefit also from an athlete's biometric data, especially if an opposing team wishes to exploit an athlete's physical weakness. I can't believe how loud these birds are. Fans are also interested in acquiring an athlete's biometric data for fantasy sports. These are a few of the reasons why athletes' biometric data is vulnerable. Furthermore, Kazazi and Fishman found that most sports team and biometric monitoring companies are not using rigorous data protection measures. My God, guys, is this not frightening? So now we're finding out that not only is this fully invasive and tracking you 24/7, no matter where you go, they're going to be able to tell what your heart rate is and what you ate for dinner and whatever. But now we find out, not only are we not protected by HIPAA, but they're not really building in any type of data protections to keep our data safe. Hence, we are now looking at DARPA, sprinkling some DARPA funding for some shape-shifting immune system type software to keep the Internet of Everything and the Internet of Things safe. Because remember, there was no security that was built into any of this stuff, and now they are worried that with these billions of IoT devices that are rolling out across the world over the next few years, that that is going to be the point of hacking, the point of attack, to take it all down. So, of course, they are going to have to take control of it. They are going to have to protect it. We have to be kept safe from now all these biohackers that are out there that we have given capabilities to get into the back ends of everything. All right, let's continue on here before I run out of time. So we have IBM Watson. IBM Watson has a whole division of their group called IBM Watson Health. And this really is where Watson is trying to make a big impact right now. Here is how IBM Watson Health is transforming the healthcare industry. And in, you know, we've already covered Watson being in healthcare, but I wanted to read this because it really kind of illustrates how far Watson has come and why I keep saying be afraid. And Watson might be our very next president. And I wouldn't doubt that. He is one smart AI, I guess if that was what you would call him, if I were Ginny Romiti, I'd be calling him cognitive computing. Imagine if you had a rare, undiagnosed disease that has stumped doctor after doctor. What if there were a single, secure database, ding, 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 that could read your symptoms and then run through thousands of clinical studies, similar patient records, and medical textbooks to present a risk-matched list of potential diseases. Now, that sounds great, doesn't it? I was like, when I first read that, I was like, wow, it would be like having the Oracle. I mean, I could cure all my own shit even better than the internet because it would be Watson that was screening everything for me. But on the other hand, be careful, be careful, be careful what you ask for. We are giving all this intelligence to the machines, guys. We are teaching them. We are training them. Every bit of our input is making them smarter. I just saw something yesterday about AI. It was deep learning AI. It was learning. Deep learning was teaching itself to build new learning, deep learning. And once robots start to be able to teach themselves. We already found out that Google's AI had done that in regards to the translation software being able to create a cipher between two languages it didn't know to try and decode them. And it did that without any human intervention. Guys, once robots start teaching robots, whether it be tin can or software, once they start learning on their own without any type of human intervention. And when we first saw that interview with the IBM creator, the Watson creator, with Charlie Rose, he had said that it was like getting his little boy on the bus for the very first time when they put Watson on Jeopardy. They put Watson out there, and he won. And they let him go on the bus all by himself that day. And Watson hasn't stopped learning since, and he can do like a million books a minute. And he's reading, and they got him on 20 oncology hospitals now. And they're moving him to all kinds of other things, and now they are moving through. They are pretty much giving it away. They are acquiring large companies that then they can roll out Watson into the back end. Listen to this, because this is in the story. So just 1 year after Watson's launch, IBM Watson Health is already starting to make seemingly implausible tasks a reality thanks to his powerful cognitive computing platform and wide-reaching partnership strategy. The Watson vision is to enable better care by surfacing insights from massive amounts of data of personal and academic health data that is being generated every single day. But IBM needs to partner within the medical, pharmaceutical, and hospital fields to make the relevant data relevant on the ground to practitioners. The institutions and companies like the Mayo Clinic, CVS Health, ding ding, and Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, there it is, are adapting the innovative new technologies to real life applications. No one company is big enough to transform an industry on its own, says Vice President of IBM Watson Health. It takes a village to change. Well, don't worry about that, because one of IBM's tentpole programs within the healthcare is Watson for Oncology, developed in partnership with New York's... Oh, I always thought it was Ohio. Oh, well. Forgive me for that one. New York's Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Institute. Some MSK oncologists have highly specific expertise in certain cancers, and by training Watson to think like they do, the knowledge expands from one specialist to any single doctor who is querying Watson. Get your access to the database, $29.95. Software as a service, guys, but now this is going to be biometric data and cancer research and everything else for a monthly fee. That means that the patient can get the same top-tier care as if they travel directly to Sloan Kettering's Institute in Manhattan. And IBM Watson provides the framework to learn, connect, and store the data while Memorial Sloan Kettering is imparting its knowledge to train the computer. So again, you know, I know that these doctors are like, yay, they're going to help us diagnose disease. But do you realize that as you are feeding all your data into the machine and showing the machine how you do your job there, Mr. Oncologist, Watson is a hell of a lot smarter than you and me and all of us put together and the 20 guys in the boardroom. They proved that in that one experiment. 20 oncologists, and Watson was running circles around them in diagnosing some of the troubled cases that they had out there. But as they're feeding them all this data, you know, the robots taking all the jobs one day, quote unquote, is going to become a reality. And as he gets better, and I'm not just talking Watson. Watson just happens to be the one we're reading about now, but there's lots of them out there now that are spinning out from all the big tech companies. As this information gets into these machines and they get more and more collected about us. Right now, this is probably narrow AI. We've looked at narrow versus wide. I don't know if they actually call it wide. They call it general. But this is a narrow AI where they can point it to learn one thing really well. But once they get to general AI, where we just have a big oracle that can do anything, we are looking at something akin to Skynet, and we're going to talk about that too. Anyway, the app that the doctors are training at Memorial Sloan Kettering, which can be run on an iPad or other tablet, is able to pack in all of the expertise of Memorial Sloan Kettering oncologists into one place so that any doctor anywhere is able to provide elite cancer care. I like the way they use elites. Yes, cancer care for the elites, or top quality cancer care to anyone. And this is significant for patients who live in areas without world-class medical services, like lower-income countries or rural America, you know, or in the plains of Africa. And that's why we need to get the 5G to the African continent. I mean, guys, you see how this double-edged sword is going to work. They're going to make it that we have all these wondrous cures. You can live forever, Jenny. Dangle, dangle, dangle. Just get your data into the database. Give us your cheek swab. And wear this little device. Look, it's really swanky. And it can play tunes, too. And you can get your email. Ding, look. Look, Jenny, run, run. It's an email. You got a carrot. You know, they are just using this stuff to manipulate us into connecting ourselves to these new ubiquitous networks, all in the name of staying healthy and, you know, soon to be all in the name of keeping costs down for health insurance. The writing is on the wall. That's what it says. This kind of a concept was not an if question, but a when question, says Mark Chris, a medical oncologist at the Memorial Sloan Kettering and the lead physician for the institution's IBM Watson collaboration. We knew that we wanted to be part of the team that developed it. So IBM and Memorial Sloan Kettering have been closely linked for many years, making the partnership a natural evolution. Both IBM CEO Ginni Rometty and former IBM chairman Lou Gerstner sit on Memorial Sloan Kettering's board. How interesting is that? However, it was MSK that first approached IBM about using Watson after watching the computer defeat two past grand champions on the Jeopardy TV show. Doo, doo, doo. And remember, it was all that game show. Now, what's even interesting about that game show, Running Man, you remember Richard Dawson. Richard Dawson of Family Feud. Richard Dawson played in Running Man, and he was the reality TV game show host that hosted the games where you ran for your life from the surveillance 24/7. You know, I was thinking about that the other day. When I first started doing the show, I did a couple shows about like what I saw in the future. This was probably already 5, maybe even 6 years back now, where I was talking about Running Man and seeing how in the future these drones with HD cameras that can bag and tag us and track us anywhere and film. And I mean, back in those days, that still wasn't a possibility. As far as we knew commercially, they didn't have little mini drones. The drone swarmed us yet. With HD cameras all cheap and little laser weapons. But I had postulated that some point in the future was going to be like Running Man. And we're going to be on the run, covering our heads, being tracked by these little zippity droney things with HD cameras as they're broadcasting us on Gladiator TV, hunting us down for real, live, on television, pay-per-view. And Motherboard kind of wrote a story about that yesterday. All right, let's get through the IBM stuff. Maybe we'll finish it up with our dystopian future in our face. Anyway, on the ground, the partnership between IBM and Memorial Sloan Kettering means that any doctor anywhere can query Watson for oncology on an iPad app if the hospital has, licensed the program, $29.95 a month. And honestly, I'm sure it's a lot more than that. For example, say a patient has a rare genetically linked form of lung cancer. A specialized cancer doctor has not had the time to keep up with the latest in specific lung cancer treatments. In the last year alone, there have now been at least 7 new lung cancer drugs approved by the FDA. And that doctor may not be aware of how best to use those drugs or if they even apply to this patient. But hey, don't fret, because meanwhile, Watson for Oncology has been fed previous case studies on patients just like this one by lung cancer specialists at Memorial Sloan Kettering. So it understands the case and it will spit out a list of potential treatments for the doctors with a percentage rank of certitude and risk next to each option. Look, it's going to do all their work for them. The doctor then reviews the list and makes the final treatment decision in consult with the patient. And it is this level of specificity that is transformative to both doctors and patients. IBM Watson, going to be Dr. Watson, taking centralized expertise and fanning it out across areas as far and wide as India and Thailand, where Watson for Oncology is also being used in selected hospitals. So there you go, people. So even beyond cancer, while Watson Health collaborates with more than a dozen cancer institutes, we found out, like I said, in that 60 Minutes episode that Charlie Rose hosted about AI and Watson, that it was over 20 now that IBM was working with in oncology. Its partnerships also expand well beyond cancer care. It is working with CVS Health, and yes, that is the drugstore, to use predictive analysis to transform care management for patients with chronic diseases, an important way to extend ongoing medical care beyond the standards doctor's office. And remember, I think CVS was the one that was starting to offer the in-house doctors right in the pharmacy. So I wonder if that is part of what that is about. Remember also, and they didn't mention in here because this might have been before the partnership happened, but they have now partnered with the VA as well, IBM Watson, to help start curing cancer and managing back-end healthcare at the VA system. Other Watson partners include good old Medtronics. We've read about them a bunch of times. They do the hypoglycemic prediction for diabetic patients with bio devices. We have Apple as well. IBM and Apple, that's got to be pretty interesting. Johnson & Johnson, good old J&J. And they have a lot of vertical development going on, so there could be a lot of industries that they get into partnering with J&J. And Under Armour, of course. We've talked about that. That's the sports underwear that they have made smart. And I bet you it is Under Armour that they are utilizing with some of the athletes that we talked about in the first story about the ethics of tracking their biometric data. Each of these programs are an equal partnership between IBM and the other company. And the two work hand in hand. Oh, it's my best friend, Dr. Watson, to establish a functional platform to query the supercomputer. And each of these companies has its own unique business model. What is happening in healthcare is new things, new ideas, and new models. And there is an opportunity to really look at different ways to create and share value together. Remember, your data is very, very valuable. And nobody is protecting it. And apparently, as we discovered in the story, that the HIPAA laws do not apply to new technologies, which is very frightening. And I would question that. I don't know. I'd like to see those HIPAA laws. Because I remember when HIPAA first came out, I was still an engineer. It was probably 2003, maybe. I don't know. It was before that. But there were new additions that had demanded encryption. And that was one of the issues. We didn't have encryption on anything. Even our banking software wasn't encrypted back in those days. So anyone could just go with a sniffer and start pulling data off the wire. But now they really want to get their teeth in there. And they're not worried about hackers as much as getting their teeth in there and having access to all that data in one big fat database. Remember the All of Us program that formerly known as Precision Medicine Initiative Cohort Program. If we all team together, we can cure what ails the human race. But remember, people, this is not for curing you and Nana. It's going to cost a bazillion dollars. And if you can afford it, maybe. I love the way they keep saying, oh, it's going to be for the poorest nations, for low-income neighborhoods. I mean, maybe. But in the end, they're just using us as guinea pigs to learn how to fix these problems. So in the future, they will be able to spin out their longevity medicine to those of them who are dubbed worthy and least defective to be allowed to continue immortally forever and rule the world. I mean, I know it sounds nuts, but do you think that they're going to let you and me and Johnny, all of us, which are on a spectrum, have some sort of mental disorder, you know, whether it be mild or severe? We've had lots of stresses. Remember, stresses damage your DNA. We've smoked and drank and ate pizza. All things that weren't good for us that now are going to damage our genes for future generations. We have not been dubbed. Get that rubber stamp for reproductibility. And so, in the end, we will not be the ones that they are focusing on making sure live for a very, very long time. It's going to be for those who can pay. It's going to be for the rich tech billionaires. It's going to be for all these executives that see the game plan, for all these people who are developing this Internet of Everything to bag and tag every bit of biased statistics that we have to be able to monitor and predict. Remember, it's all about prediction in the future. Be able to predict what's going to happen to your body or which reaction you're going to have or what you might do next. There is some software out there now that is working on being able to make decisions as to what happens next. Just looking at pictures, I'm telling you, AI is getting pretty damn smart. We are teaching them very well. They're good little students. IBM is also opening up its platform to allow other companies to tinker or develop their own programs. Watson is making its capabilities available as an API so that other companies of all sizes can use Watson's cognitive computing powers to meet their needs. And that's very smart. That's what all these big boys are doing. They have opened up their APIs so programmers can use their code and hook into it in the back end of their software and make it look like it's their own capability as they're crunching numbers with Watson in the back end. And that's very smart because that's going to expand their business. If they give the API away for free and then just need a $29.95 a month subscription fee, they're going to end up with a lot of small, medium businesses wanting to get on board and have that capability of cognitive computing and being smart on the back end. Developers, entrepreneurs, and data hobbyists, as well as students, have built more than 7,000 applications already in this last year through Watson's ecosystem. And I don't know. They go into all this stuff. Let's go down to this last one. WellTalk is one of those examples. The company, which IBM has actually invested in, works directly with self-insured companies and insurers. And this is what I was saying about health insurance. A self-insured company, the place I worked for the last year, they actually did that, where they became self-insured because insurance was getting too expensive. And so what we did was we said we had, you know, so many hundreds of employees, and these employees have gone to the doctor an average of so many times in a year. And they said, all right, well, look, you guys look like a pretty healthy bunch. We'll allow you to insure yourselves for so much. But the second, and the thing is that they cause you to create your own patient pool is what happens. But the second that people start using the medical services, well, now you become a risk pool. And so the next year when you try to get insurance and be insured on yourself, now your rate's going to go sky high. And that's exactly what happened to us. Well, listen to this. WellTalk is one of those examples. The company, which IBM has invested in, works directly with self-insured companies and insurers to find ways to engage customers so they choose healthier behaviors. Ding, 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 ding. This is what happens when they start being able to monitor you 24/7. Oh, don't eat those Cheetos, Johnny. Because guess what? It's going to cause your health insurance to go up as you are now becoming a risk with those trans fats. It's a Cafe Well Concierge app, and it uses Watson's cognitive computing capabilities to provide customized insight into patients based on their personal profiles, helping them with things like finding a healthy restaurant or answering detailed questions about their health. Ultimately, these large and small partnerships are meant to give IBM's Watson Health the breadth to help patients and doctors make better decisions. And they are some really huge benefits. All right. Well, this goes on and on and on. I don't know if I really want to read any more about this. Rometty, Ginny Rometty, has devoted more than $4 billion to build out Watson's health platform via acquisitions, indicating just how important the business was to IBM. Most recently, they paid $2.6 billion for TrueVin Health Analytics, which will bring its total database now 300 million patients, IBM Watson Health. And the deal will double IBM size, their Watson size, to nearly 5,000 employees. However, so guys, the 300 million patients they just pretty much bought by acquiring TrueVin Health Analytics. However, in terms of Watson's profit potential, and that's, you know, this is what gets me. They're going to just start. It's not going to be your choice to have IBM Watson as your doctor. IBM is working on acquisitions, sales and acquisitions. So as they're buying up companies that already have large databases of health information, they are slithering in the back door to your data. And that data that's already part of the electronic medical health records, you know, it's very questionable now, according to a few stories, as to what HIPAA regulations still exist. I mean, there are protections out there, but it sounds to me like they are being eroded. And that with new technologies, and of course, there is no real security on any of this stuff. A lot of our data could be at risk. A lot of your privacy could really be at risk. There is no question that technology and big data have the potential to transform healthcare in particular. And one patient's electronic health records holds an average of 400 gigabytes worth of data. Ah, so I guess they already got that moving along pretty far. 400 gigabytes of an electronic medical health record is a lot of data. But get this, if you add a patient's genetic information, take this Q-tip, Johnny, and swab your cheek, that ups the person's total health data up to 6 terabytes each. And then think about cross-referencing an individual's total data with all the medical literature or even thousands and thousands of other similar patients. It's beyond human cognition to be able to literally read that much information. And hence, again, we questioned a long time ago about the NSA and the Alphabet Agency dragnet sweeps of data that they're just putting into dossiers, not knowing what to do with it, capturing all your communications. And everybody laughed like, ha-ha, Alphabet Agencies, choke on it. But you know what? All they got to do is take some of these supercomputing platforms and point them, searching for keywords or doing like language processing, like all the stuff that Kurzweil's been teaching the machine to do. Start sorting and finding. And it's no longer an issue. So anyway, put an air of caution to Watson. Watson can do some amazing things. Watson can diagnose and help doctors cure. But be careful what we are feeding to the machine, because the machine will become our overlord at some point in the future. They will know more than us. They will be able to sequence things in their little tin canny minds that we have never even imagined. They can take bazillions of pages of data and come to a conclusion in an instant, dwarfing our puny human brains. Doesn't that scare you? Like, these machines are so way far more advanced, and then we're going to give them legs and autonomousness. I think you called it autonomy, but autonomousness sounds good. Danger Will Robinson. All right, so here we go. So now, step right up, Skynet. The Running Man is a perfect dystopian movie for Trump's inauguration in 2017. The Running Man, a 1987 science fiction action film starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, is having a bit of a resurgence of relevance this year in 2017, though not in the way its stars and writers ever really envisioned. Isn't it funny how all these dystopian sci-fi movies and books that we read when we were kids are all seeming to come true? Oh, just amazing. The film is replete with all of the cheesy 80s music and smug action hero one-liners that one might expect from a Schwarzenegger flick. Yes, he even drops an "I'll be back." But it was a good movie. But the movie, and remember, Richard Dawson, the game show host that was reality TV. Telling you, that movie was the movie that actually tipped me off to that whole reality TV thing. And when it first started happening, I was like, oh no, it's like the Coliseum on television. People are getting sucked into the machine and they're going to watch that dangling carrot. They're going to be screaming for blood. And it's going to be the fun for tracing down all of these newfound criminals, these thought criminals, these criminals who are operating outside of perimeters and must be taken out. It's going to become a competition sport where all of America can watch and see. But the movie about, and who knows, I don't know, but we now have a reality TV show host who's going to be sworn in here in about an hour and 7 minutes. So it's really got to make you wonder. It's really starting to get a little too close to home. And I can't believe, like, I've been talking about Running Man in our future for so many years, and a literal story comes out discussing Running Man and what is going on today, yesterday. Anyway, but the movie about a dystopian America pacified by a deadly reality show in the then futuristic year of 2017, and it was in the movie, it is still incredibly unsettling to watch on the eve of President Donald Trump's inauguration on January 20th, 2017, which happens to be today. At the time of its release, Schwarzenegger saw it as nothing more than fiction. And in the movie, civil liberties and civil rights are abandoned, says Schwarzenegger in a 1987 television interview with entertainment reporter Bobby Weigand. That's why it is a movie and it is not reality, says Schwarzenegger. It is just a story and you can never forget that. Well, ha, 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 the joke is on us. Although the U.S. Justice Department has yet to establish an entertainment division, quote unquote, for the transfer of convicted criminals to a game show, watching The Running Man's depiction of the hyper-militarization of America and the blending of reality television with reality, ding, 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 hits too close to home for today. Remember, we've talked about that many times, how they have used reality TV to really kind of bleed where one ends and the next begins. You know, the closer that fantasy and reality become, and as we are now rolling out virtual reality and augmented reality, you know, it is really in their best interest to have us confused as to what is real and what is not, to have us really comfortable with merging ourselves into that machine, because that is the end result. This reality TV was just the next step in trying to muddy those waters so they can then feed you whatever information they want. You'll believe that it is real. You'll be able to feel emotions for the people on television. I mean, they've already shown that that's happened. You watch reruns and your brain produces chemicals that you would produce if you were with your best friend. Every day this year, I turn around and there is another example of how stuff in this movie, and that is a Running Man is coming true, says Steven D'Souza, who actually wrote the screenplay for Running Man in an interview. I want to say it is not my fault. Set in Los Angeles, circa 2019, The Running Man is based off a 1982 novel written by the same Stephen King under his pseudonym of Richard Bachman, and it tells the story of America in the aftermath of an economic collapse that happened in 2017. And oh my God, that just gave me chills, as we have all now postulated that maybe Trump has been put into office to manage the bankruptcy. Thank you, Hammy, for that one. In this post-apocalyptic future, the huge class divide is maintained by military rule. The elite live in fancy, militarized high-rises in Los Angeles, while the poor are relegated to massive slums on the outskirts of the city, where they are slaughtered indiscriminately by the military. And it's not tough to see some parallels here to the real-life economic disparities, gentrification, and near-record-high income gaps in the United States today. After escaping from a labor camp where he had been imprisoned for refusing to fire on unarmed civilians, ding, 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 helicopter pilot Ben Richards, played by Schwarzenegger, briefly links up with members of a rebellion before being captured by the police during an attempt to escape to Hawaii. And instead of being sent back to the camps, he is offered a chance to compete on The Running Man, America's most popular reality television show, which pits convicted criminals called runners against mercenaries called stalkers in a futuristic take on gladiator-style blood sports. And if he wins by surviving and defeating out all of the stalkers, well, then he can choose one of three illustrious prizes: a trial by jury, a suspended sentence, or, if you're really lucky, a full pardon. Prizes that no contestant has ever won. And I'll tell you, there was some really freaky stuff too. Did anybody know, you know, the reality TV show that Trump was host on, or whatever it was, The Apprentice? I guess Arnold Schwarzenegger is a new host of The Apprentice. I don't know. Pretty bizarre. All right, guys, have an awesome weekend. Have an awesome Friday, and I will see you on Monday. Everybody, take care.
This is Ozzy Skateboard, and you're listening to UC.